On Friday, November the 11th, 2022, tragedy struck the sports world when three football players at the University of Virginia were gunned down senselessly by another football peer. Because of our commitment to help elite amateur athletes achieve their on and off the field athletic goals, we were deeply saddened by this news. Devin Chandler, Deshaun Perry, and Lavelle Davis Jr.'s lives were cut short and they would never have the opportunity to fully live out their goals and dreams. Our thoughts and prayers are with these victims, their family, the UVA football team and staff, and the entire UVA campus as they find the strength to pick up the pieces and move on from this act of violence. We pray that God will grant you peace and comfort during this period of bereavement. Go Hoos.
Today's show is brought to you by LMH Strategies, Inc., a leadership, management, and human systems consulting company.
Acceleration is applying a great deal of force into the ground and being able to essentially push the body horizontally. So when we look at it and you actually break down off a force plate, acceleration directly correlates to an athlete's ability to produce horizontal force. So if you were to think about this, it would be a broad jump, right? So I perform a lot of single leg and a lot of double leg bilateral broad jumps, right? So that's one of my starting points. So once an athlete displays enough strength, then I transfer that over to power. That's one of my big metrics that I perform with athletes.
Welcome to Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete, hosted by Glenn Hames, where we share tips and strategies that help amateur athletes, coaches, and teams achieve their on and off the field athletic goals. Our show discusses topics important to the elite amateur athlete. Whether you play football, basketball, soccer, or any other active sport, either on the field or court, our experienced industry experts, coaches, and former professional athletes will provide firsthand insight on topics that will give athletes who desire to play sports at the highest level an edge over their competition and undoubtedly will help turn their athletic goals into a reality. When there's a new season, there are new goals. What's your field goals?
We have the capability to make the world's first bionic man. Steve Austin will be that man. Better, stronger, faster.
Now, I know I'm really aging myself here when I ask you all this question, but how many of you all out there grew up watching or ever watched The $6 Million Man? Oh my gosh, let me tell you, if you grew up in the mid to late 70s, then you know that The $6 Million Man was the joint and one of the best shows on primetime TV. Now let me tell you straight up, for those that may be clueless to what I'm talking about, this show right here was classic TV at its best and made the actor Lee Majors one of the most recognizable faces in Hollywood. This show was about an astronaut that became severely injured in a test flight accident and is literally rebuilt in an operation that cost $6 million. His right arm, both legs, and left eye are replaced with bionic implants that enhance his strength, speed, and vision, giving him superhuman abilities far above human norms. Now, let me be very clear. He wasn't faster than a speeding bullet or more powerful than a locomotive, and he couldn't leap over tall buildings in a single bound, but he could run at speeds of over 60 miles per hour. His eye had a 20-to-1 ratio zoom lens and infrared capabilities. His bionic limbs had the equivalent power of a bulldozer, and he had a vertical leap of 30 feet or more. And I'm being dead serious when I say Steve Austin was the closest thing to being Superman without actually being Superman. And just for the record, yes, ladies, there was also a bionic woman. Her name was Jamie Summers, who was critically injured during a skydiving accident, and her life was saved with bionic surgical implants, giving her the same similar superhuman capabilities to those of Steve Austin. Now, looking back at these two superhumans and their abilities to run, jump, and possess freakish strength, got me thinking about how athletes today possess these far-out video game playing capabilities and the differences in their training and physical capabilities versus the training and physical capabilities of athletes from years ago. You know, when I was growing up, we were what you would call casual athletes. Now, what I mean by that is there used to be a time when we as athletes would just go to the gym to bulk up and improve our endurance. And even though we worked out hard, in the grand scheme of things, our workouts were merely lifting weights, running wind sprints, and jogging in the off-season to stay in shape and participating in the same generic off-season workouts as our team and teammates. Boring. Today, elite athletes are working on their athletic abilities, their speed, power, strength, and agility, and their workouts are literally transforming them into becoming what I call super athletes. And they're doing it in a way that none of my coaches or skills coaches knew about. And in fact, I don't even think we had a skills coach, at least not in the same way as they are today. But the science of sports is different, and the methods to improve athletic skills has advanced from the days of bench and squats and power cleans. And besides, great weight room performances doesn't guarantee better athletic performance. But nowadays, elite athletes are incorporating new training techniques into their workouts as a way to become better athletes. And that process starts with agility training, because agility is the biggest difference between athletes who dominate and athletes who don't. So if you want to build the speed to outrun the competition, the strength to dominate on the field or court, and the power to jump higher, move quicker, and change directions faster, then you need to incorporate speed and agility training into your daily workouts. Now, regardless of the sport you play, speed and agility are essential to taking your athletic performance to the next level, because it combines speed, balance, strength, coordination, and body control all in one movement. And the rewards of agility training not only improve athletic performance, but it also improves coordination, balance, and stability while reducing the risk of injury. Now, agility doesn't just improve athletic performance. It will also help you in your day-to-day movements. And after intense agility training, your body will have the speed and power with full control of movements, as well as provide you with those in-game instincts that will make you more dominant, which ultimately would give you that edge over your competition. Now, my next guest has worked with athletes of all sports and from all levels to produce the highest quality of performance in each. For over a decade, he's helped thousands of athletes improve their speed, jump higher, grow stronger, and become more athletically fit. He's trained some of the top NCAA athletes to professionals playing in the NFL, Major League Baseball, the NBA, Major League Soccer, and even the UFC. He's the founder and owner of Overtime Athletics, which is the leading online sports performance training platform for athletes who truly want to take their training and skills to the next level. With more than 200,000 athletes in the OTA nation from 91 countries worldwide, his platform has become the world's most trusted athletic training community. I'm extremely fortunate to have him joining with us today to discuss how athletes can increase their strength, their power, and speed, because I've been chasing him for a long time. And I reserve this topic just for him because, quite frankly, he's the best at what he does. So coming up next on Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete, the inventor of hardcore strength training, my man, the teacher, Chris Barnhart. Welcome back to Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete. And let me tell you, you guys are definitely in for a treat today. And let me be very clear. If you're a student athlete that's trying to play and take your skills to the next level, and you're not incorporating some aspect of OTA training in your regimen, you're putting yourself at a disadvantage. So let's just jump right into it. I got the founder and CEO of OTA Athletics, my man, Chris Barnhart. Welcome to the field.
Thank you so much, Glenn. I appreciate you having me.
Chris, let me tell you, man, I am uber excited to have you on the show with us today. I literally stumbled across your videos just over a year ago, And it was just by happenstance and the promotion alone that you and your team produce, from the background music, the training snippets, watching you break down information clearly and concisely, had me locked in from day one. Since that time, I told my team, I was like, yo, we got to get him on the show. We got to get this joker on the show. And I didn't know how we were going to do it. I didn't even know if you would say yes, but I just knew we had to exhaust every opportunity to find you, extend you an invitation, and get you on, because I was already sharing your videos on our social media platforms and advertising that you were going to be a future guest. So we knew we had to make it happen, or we're going to have egg on our face. And let me tell you, man, when you said yes, man, I was a kid in the candy store and I could not wait for this episode to come. So trust me when I say I'm excited that you are here and welcome to the field.
Thank you so much. I greatly appreciate it. I'm glad that we're able to connect. It's still amazing to me how technology is able to connect all of us, and we're able to serve these athletes the way we are. And it's funny, we were just talking previously to this. We didn't have these same opportunity. So we want to take things to the next level for these next generation of athletes coming up. And I'm honored to be on this, and I'm grateful that for the opportunity.
For sure. So check this out, Chris. Back in December 2019, my son played in his last football bowl game when he was with Marshall University, and they played against Central Florida in the Gasparilla Bowl. We hung around for an extra day or two just to tour a few training facilities in the area because he was getting geared up for the NFL Pro Day and the NFL Combine. And this was right before the whole pandemic shut down. And I remember we visited ASPI, Applied Science and Performance Institute, to do his training. And we almost went with them before we settled on sending him to train with Chuck Smith in Atlanta. So I'm not sure if you're familiar with ASPI or not, but had I known about you and OTA then, I would have definitely sent them to you for sure.
Oh, man. Thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate that. Yeah. I wish I got a chance to work with him.
Yeah, he's still getting some calls, so he might have an opportunity to play again. Not in the NFL per se, but just on some other divisions, some other leagues. So who knows, man? Maybe we'll be able to get him back down there for you.
Let me know. Come take a trip to St. Pete.
No doubt. So look, Chris, there's the whistle. And for us, that means it's time to get on the field. So you ready to take the field?
Yes, sir. Let's get it.
All right, let's do it. So look, I was reading a couple of your excerpts and I saw where you coined the phrase casual athletic training and compared it to elite athletic training. And I just thought that was such an interesting phrase. So I want you to talk to us about what that term means and the differences between the two.
Yeah, great question. Believe it or not, it started off as just a cue that I used to give my guys, right? It was just one of those talk tracks that as a coach, you're constantly cueing. And there's a difference between having intent, focus, quality repetitions versus casual repetitions, right? Where the athlete's just going through the motion. So it just became one of those kind of excerpts during coaching that I was just like, I used to tell the guys nothing casual. And then it just transpired and turned into casual athlete is one that's going to do the things to do, but they're really taking it with that quality of repetition, that quality of work, the intent, the focus with everything that they're doing. They're not eyes on the prize. They're doing all the things that they need to do. And it's more of a glamorous thing now to say you want to be D1 or professional, as opposed to actually like being locked in on a specific target and working towards that, reverse engineering and being very methodical about the way that you move. So casual is just more or less, hey, it's okay if you just want to play this because you enjoy the sport. And there's also this other side where it's, hey, we're really trying to be great and perfect our craft. And the guys who want to really perfect their craft and be great at it is the ones that I really love, who have grit. Now we're in a day and age where it can be separated. It's vogue to be an athlete and have these aspirations, but it's also another thing to be able to apply yourself day in and day out, whether you feel like it or not.
When I heard that phrase, I started thinking about my playing days, and I was a multi-sport athlete. So I'm very competitive, played hard, worked out hard. But after hearing your breakdown, I had to admit that I was a casual athlete in regards to my training, and to no fault of anyone, that's just how it was at that particular time, whereas athletic training is just different nowadays.
Absolutely. It's evolved tremendously. What really motivated me to get into this game was I was that kid that was buying all the muscle magazines off the grocery store shelf, begging my mom when I went to the grocery store on the weekend to learn something new. And they're teaching you how to bicep curl 3 sets of 12 and everything. So my way to pay forward was like, I'm showing my age now, but at the time, like, the internet wasn't the sensation that it is. There wasn't information on there. Like, I was hungry for all of that information. I was obsessed with it. I would learn about strength and I would go as deep as I can and learn about these guys in Germany and Russia who were learning strength. And then I wanted to share those bits and pieces and paying it forward to athletes coming up. Mm-hmm. So that was how I wanted to get into the game.
Nice. Yeah, I get that. So let me ask you this. When an athlete, whether they are a freak athlete or an underdog from any sport or any level, and they walk through your door, what are the first things are you looking for in their athletic ability when you lay eyes on them? And what types of techniques are they generally looking for you to help them improve upon?
Great question. Great question. Loaded, but it's a great question. So if I could simplify this. So for the most part, to give you a little bit of background, I deal with mostly football, basketball, baseball athletes. Now that walk into our gym, deal with people who come from overseas, who have ran track, played soccer in the Olympics, played volleyball in the Olympics. We even deal with ultimate frisbee athletes. Mm. So there's not too much we don't touch when it comes to speed, power, and strength. If you're a power athlete, you need to possess explosiveness. We've probably worked with you. There's just a multitude of sports, right? Mm-hmm. And if I could break it down into one thing that I really see across the board that if I elevate, I know that I can really get the athlete, it's going to be your vertical force. Now, obviously, this can turn into a multitude of different things. And, you know, really, the thing that we do well is we just stick to the meat and potatoes, right? Mm-hmm. We do the basics really well. So there's a little nuance to that. So it's how you coach that, how you connect with the athlete and those things. It's, don't get me wrong. We like to specify and we like to get a little flashy with it. Obviously, if it's going to translate over to the athlete sport, one of the biggest things that we try to focus on, like I said, is just really fundamental basics. If I can get an athlete's vertical force up, and once we meet a sufficient amount of that vertical force, then we can start transferring a lot of that over. It's not to say that we don't touch those other things, right? If I have a football athlete, obviously we're going to work on change of direction, agility, linear speed, deceleration, strength, all these different modalities that are in the performance sector. But that's one of those baseline metrics that we're always trying to push the limits of and really work with them. To add to that, when I break down an athlete has an entrance evaluation, based on their sport, we have basically a needs analysis based off that athlete, right? If they're a baseball athlete, it's completely different than, say, a basketball or football. There is a lot of carryover, right? Like vertical jump, absolute strength, all these things, right? Linear speed. However, I try to identify, based off that needs analysis of the sport and of the position, I try to identify the biggest margins. And so really what my game is, I try to attack the weaknesses. So if it's something that you're going to have to face on the field and that's a weakness of yours, if I can attack that thing and make it a strength, you've now added another tool to your toolbox so that when you enter this next offseason, you're a new athlete, right? So if you are an athlete, right, you're a basketball athlete and you don't have a 3-point shot, right? And we were to just say, hey, let's take the time and really just hammer this offseason. And you're an athlete that needs to face that and actually add that tool to the box. Then it's something that you're going to have in your game this next season. I don't know if that draws the right metaphor for you, or example, I should say. But I just do that on the physical level, mm-hmm. right? So I just tried to amplify and enhance what they're going to face that's going to translate over to the field or court. And if I could do that, and the higher I get with some of these higher level athletes, I could tell that I really start to attack the 1%, right? 1% here, 1% here. And then we add all those 1% up and we got better by, say, 10%, right? So it just depends on the level of the athlete, depends on the sport, mm-hmm. depends on the position, and then the specific needs of that athlete. So I try to identify those margins and the biggest ones that we can attack and just try to enhance the athlete from that angle.
Yeah, I get that. So when you have a collegiate athlete that's coming in,
right,
Are you tweaking and building off what they currently are doing? Are you enhancing what they're doing? Or are you exposing them to something completely different?
That's a great question. So when it comes to collegiate and professional athletes, I try to build a good rapport with their either performance director or strength and conditioning coach, depending on what level they are. I don't have any ego in it. So I explain this as a strength or performance coach. Hey, I'm just trying to pass the baton as smoothly as we possibly can. Now, don't get me wrong. Each athlete needs to take their career in their own hands, right? But at the same time, like at a professional level, like that organization's paying to be where they want you at. And so I try to carry over what they may have been working on. So we do a phone conversation where I get on the same page as them and make sure that I can, if it's an athlete, for instance, that's compromised or has some great deal of imbalances and they want to see those corrected, I want to make sure that we're working on the same thing together. For the most part, all of us are on the same page, right? So what I like to do is a clean bill, right? Of just my evaluation, get my eyes on the athlete. Let me see how they move. Let me see what baseline metrics based off their sport, their position. Let's gather those. And then I'm able to see, okay, we might need to focus a little bit more on strength. We might need to focus a little bit more on power, or we need to focus more on agility or linear speed, whatever it is. And then from there, what I like to do is I like to talk to usually their coach or their strength and conditioning coach and make sure I'm on the same page so that I can say, oh, you and I both saw the same things. And then I can make sure that I amplify that. So this athlete is coming back in the shape that you want to see. And if I can do that, then obviously we pass the baton smoothly, right? Between coach to coach. And then we've obviously looked out for the athlete's long-term athletic development. And that's really what we're trying to do is just add that other side to their game. So that just goes back to me attacking their margins, right? I try to attack the weakness that they have, that they're going to see. Their strength is going to be their strength. It's not to say that we don't touch it because I take a very balanced approach. It's just more or less that I try to amplify the things that they might not like to do or that they suck at. And so that now it becomes a strength. And that's when you become a more well-rounded, better athlete.
Now, this might be an open-ended question, but what should be the end goal of the athlete who is looking to gain that competitive edge from strength and agility training? And you can break this actually down to be sport specific if need be, because I'm sure it's different for athletes who play different sports.
Absolutely. End game for most of the athletes is just from a general. Let's take it from a global perspective. It really just comes down to the stat sheet and the wins and loss column. That's what I say. My talk track with these coaches is like, whatever I can do to add more wins to your team. Because at the end of the day, that's what it's all about. And then when you break it down to the actual athlete, it's increasing their stat line, whatever. We're so advanced now that everything is so analytical, right? If you look at baseball now, like, they want to see specific metrics from each athlete, right? And they want to see how many bases can they predict that he's going to get, whatever it is, right? So they want to be able to see those things. And when you actually work with some of these agents and these organizations at the professional level, you'd be amazed. They have every single game broken down to how fast they were, how powerful they were. All these metrics are driving what's happening in my field. Mm-hmm. So my biggest thing is, how do I translate that? How do I enhance that to basically transfer over? And it really just comes down to getting them faster, more explosive. Mm-hmm. Their skill set, right? Their skills is not something that's necessarily in my department, but I want to continue to find ways that I can enhance their skill set. And then there's the other component where they actually got to put it all together, be present in a game, right, in competition, and then actually ball out. So it is very multifaceted, and it's just one of those things that I try to push those boundaries and just continue to, again, take it on an individual basis, even though we do group training, right? Mm-hmm. You might see some of the videos, I get 20 NFL guys in one class, and they're all like competing, the camaraderie's, they're all dogs getting after it and just absolutely just grinding, right? But behind the scenes, I know what each one of these athletes individually needs. And it's just a matter of elevating them individually while also increasing their baseline based off their sport.
Yeah. You talk about the athlete having to grind out. I look at it as that's the ultimate goal of an athlete. When they're out there on that field or court, that is their time to flat out dominate the competition. And in order for them to do that, they got to have that speed to outrun, to the strength to outmuscle them on the field or court, and the power to jump higher, move quicker, and change directions faster. And that just means that they have to increase their athleticism, right? So before we get into the depths of agility training, I want you to first talk about the three phases of agility training. When I read that, you said that those three phases were like the mechanics, force management, and cognitive conditioning.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And first two can be interchangeable depending on the actual athlete and the level of, but to speak on those two, well, force management, not only increasing athlete's ability to produce force, but also accept force. So that's decelerating, right? Because anytime you're changing direction, it's a matter of being able to obviously decelerate whatever direction you need to go in and then rapidly produce force and accelerate. This is just your ability to be able to be as efficient as you can in those motions. So when I refer to mechanics, when it comes to agility or change of direction training, what I'm referring to is an athlete being able to essentially be able to move their feet rapidly to, say, change direction of their hips, right? Mm-hmm. So that they have an efficient turn of the hips. You were talking about your son plays football. You could tell really quickly if an athlete has an efficient ability, say, for instance, like during a pro shuttle, right? If they have the ability, just the mechanics and the technique to be able to change direction. And a lot of that is just simply the athlete footwork and their ability to flip their hips or whatever their sport may be. It might be a shortstop who has to use their range side to be able to get to a certain ball. So when I say mechanics and technique, it's a lot of the nuance of being able to position themselves in the most efficient, advantageous position to change directions, just simply because some athletes don't have that. So depending on the athlete and the patterns that they face, we're going to hammer those. We're going to add a lot of volume and train those. Like I said, force management is the ability to be able to produce force and accept force, or basically accelerate and decelerate. And then finally is the cognitive aspect of, right? And that's the reactionary component. And that's where you actually turn it into game speed. And that's where you actually see that displayed on the field. Because you can have an athlete runs a pro shuttle extremely fast, right? They have the first two, but the last component is the ability to do that when it's not predetermined, right? If I know where I'm going, and I'm going 5 yards here and I have to cut, there's the cone, I have to run back 10 and then finish five. That's laid out for me. I've already taken that out. But to have the situational awareness of what's on the line, what's the down and distance for the inning, or how many outs there are, or whatever, how many seconds are on the clock, or whatever sport it is, right? And then the ability to react off that external stimulus, right? And basically process that information, right, through the eyes, right? Be rapidly process that with the brain and then translate that over to the body to create that movement. That's a skill that we can absolutely elevate. The more that we can essentially react off an external stimulus, the way that the athlete's going to have to see it on the field or court, we could get those reps in. And we can increase their decision-making ability so that they slow the game down and they're playing faster. Mm-hmm. That's what it's all about. You want the athlete to be as present as they possibly can. And that's kind of like in that flow state, right? Most athletes gain that through experience. But what we're seeing is we can actually reduce that gap, right? We can reduce that so that it's not based necessarily off experience, but this is something that we can actually train in performance. And the more that we're able to expose them to those reactionary, whether it be visual or auditory or things of that nature, then we can see that translate over to sport tremendously.
I want to get into some of those specifics. And we all know the benefits to speed and agility training. So I want you to break down some of those benefits and talk about best strength exercises that will improve overall speed and acceleration. So I want to start with the components of building game speed and how being able to run fast and move on a dime gives you that competitive edge, especially in sports like football, basketball, baseball, soccer, and track, where speed is such a huge factor in player performance. So talk about the drills and exercises needed to shape foundational biomechanics that gives athlete game speed advantage over their opponents.
Absolutely. It's a great question. So when I refer to game speed, I'm speaking specifically of speed that's applied in competition. So game speed can be applied completely different from baseball, basketball, football, right? So let's take an example. So the way we refer to speed is basically an athlete being able to run a 10-yard split, a 40-yard dash, a 60-yard dash. Maybe it's a pro shuttle where it's predetermined. When I'm talking about game speed, I'm referring to an athlete being able to apply that speed. We've all had that teammate who looked like Tarzan, played like Jane, right? An absolute warrior in the weight room, threw the weight around, fast as heck on the stopwatch. Yep. But when it actually getting in practice and on the field, it just didn't come together.
Chris, so I'll never forget my senior year of high school when I was trying to play football in college, right? I had to go up against a guy that was bigger and way stronger than me. And quite naturally, I'm going to tell you, I was like, ah, damn. But I was like, bump it. This was my opportunity for me to shine. Uh-huh. And when I did a one-on-one hit drill with him, I knocked him on his butt, like just with ease. And from there, I was like, oh, hell yeah. But it told me that big and strong doesn't always equate to athleticism.
100%. 100%. And I see it over and over again. This isn't theoretical. Like, I'm actually seeing this in the gym over and over again. There's so much else to it. And from my perspective, what's in my wheelhouse and within my scope, the ability to react, the ability to process an external stimulus and then apply it, right? If it's a baseball athlete, being able to steal a base, right? Being able to react, being able to know the count, being able to watch a pitcher. If it's a football athlete, being able to know the down and distance, how many yards do they need till the first down, right? Let's say it's a safety. And he's able to come up and play and put himself in the right position to start off with. But then also understanding film. And there's so many other components to it. But then also being able to react, being able to read, right? Being able to look in your peripheral vision, being able to look in and just having the optimal or optimized sports vision. There's just so much when it comes to basketball. It's being able to see the angles, being able to see the lanes, and then basically applying that speed. The other side of this, I think, used to be very esoteric, but we've come a long way in it, is the cognitive ability to be able to process your decision making and being able to not necessarily react on a dime, but just being able to slow the game down. Right? And when you can slow the game down, all of these factors add to it. So there's this physical component and there's this other side to it when it comes to game speed. Mm-hmm. And that's really some of the things that some of it's out of my wheelhouse. Don't get me wrong. I actually met with one of my good friends today, Tuck Taylor. He's big in the space and the cognitive conditioning, and he's doing amazing work. And that's a little bit out of my wheelhouse, but I expose it to all my athletes because what he's doing is, again, these are all components for an athlete to be able to process the information rapidly and be able to apply that right to their actual sport, right? So it's one thing to be able to, when somebody says go, to be able to run as fast as you can. It's another thing to be able to interpret the game that you're playing, slow it down, and then be able to apply that same. And that's really what I guess you could say in a nutshell or global perspective is game speed, right? It's actually applying that speed, agility, quickness in your actual sport. And there's a lot of things we could do outside the actual sport.
I'm always fascinated to see just how an athlete can just turn them jets on after they make a big play. So I want you to talk about the most effective methods and strength exercises that can help that athlete increase acceleration.
Yeah, it's a great question. First and foremost, depending on what level the athlete is at, getting strong is going to be just developing absolute strength, right? Total amount of resistance that an athlete can overcome, especially in the lower body, right? So things such as like a trap bar deadlift, squat, lunge, reverse lunge, these basic compound movements where we can increase an athlete's ability to produce force. And then what we do is once we get a sufficient amount through strength, right? And I say that because a lot of our high school athletes, like they look for the next best acceleration drill when all they really need to do is get stronger. So I don't try to overcomplicate things, and I'm not a shiny object type of coach, right? We apply some of these things, but at the end of the day, let me tell you something. If there's a high school athlete and they need to get faster, 9 times out of 10, they need to run longer distances at faster velocities to be able to adapt to that and get faster. So it's not something that we need to overcomplicate. A lot of the drills that you might see me perform with athletes, right, that look a little bit flash and dash, it's because you got to understand these athletes are like, again, we're going back to that, I'm reaching for the 1%. These athletes are already running 4.3s. They're already sprinting extremely fast. But to come full circle and to answer the question specifically when it comes to acceleration, one, acceleration is applying a great deal of force into the ground and being able to essentially push the body horizontally. So when we look at it and you actually break down off a force plate, acceleration directly correlates to an athlete's ability to produce horizontal force. So if you were to think about this, it would be a broad jump, right? So I perform a lot of single leg and a lot of double leg bilateral broad jumps, right? So that's one of my starting points. So once an athlete displays enough strength, then I transfer that over to power. And that's where we perform a lot of single leg broad jumps, a lot of single leg double, single leg triple jumps. That's one of my big metrics that I perform with athletes. Broad jumps, bounds, anything where they're producing that horizontal force, alternate bounding. And then once I've been able to develop that, simultaneously, I'm performing basically acceleration drills where we're teaching that to essentially apply the right angles and the right trajectory back into the ground and essentially produce that horizontal force or that horizontal trajectory. So there is some technical aspect to it where the athlete doesn't want to cycle like they are pedaling a bicycle in top speed or maximum velocity, but also teaching the athlete to be able to strike the ground down and back and push off the ground to propel themselves forward. So the drills that are going to set them up to do that outside the jumping are going to be things like kneeling starts, ground starts, falling starts, simple high knee piston runs or piston runs where the athlete is just really firing up the nervous system, being able to lift with the hip and attack the ground. These are all drills that are going to support that same pattern that I'm looking to enhance that they actually do when they're performing acceleration, which is typically your first 10, 15, 20 yards, depending on the athlete.
So how can the athlete improve their multidirectional movement and quickness?
Great question. To decelerate. Some of the biggest changes I've seen, I had an NFL cornerback this year. It was his second or third offseason with me. He's an extremely high-level corner. Plays on a Super Bowl championship team. Amazing athlete. Amazing length. His anthropometrics is just off the charts, right? For his position, they just fit him. He's a natural corner. I say that because he's come to me and in our evaluation, we noticed he didn't decelerate properly. That was something that we focused on. So I say that because that's something that I've seen with an athlete who's at the highest level, doing it at the highest component. We were able to do that and it just was an absolute game changer for him. So if an athlete's able to properly absorb force and decelerate, that's one of those key metrics that we want to make sure we focus on. Now, that's kind of me pulling one piece of the whole puzzle out of it and just hearing it, because that's something that we definitely attack, right? And basically being able to, again, perform a lot of plyometrics where we're focused on absorbing force and doing it in those different directions. There's obviously a whole spectrum of things and modalities that we want to focus on to be able to increase an athlete's ability to change directions or multidirectional. The other aspect that I'll add besides that, and obviously decelerating, accelerating, producing force, mechanics, we talked about all those things. But one thing that I think is often forgot is efficiency of movement, right? So one of the things that I do is what I notice is, for instance, like a lot of baseball athletes that come to me, they just don't typically perform those movements. Even though they do them on the field, they don't do a high volume of them. I use a metaphor. And one of the metaphors I use is we've all seen basketball halftime shows where they have a guy or a girl come on and they shoot a half court shot and they can win a car. Familiar with what I'm talking about? Mm-hmm. I often tell these athletes, I say, hey, so if we wanted to increase our chances of winning that car and you have 2 months to prepare, what are you going to do? The response is, I'm going to shoot as many half court shots as I possibly can, right? And I say, yeah, right? You're not going to perform a layup, right? So that's not going to support you in hitting court shots. So the reason why I say that is because these athletes need to be performing a certain volume of this that's going to increase their efficiency. By simply training those patterns that they're going to face on the field at a high volume, they're going to do that better. And then where I take it a step further is I call it isolate and elevate. So I like to isolate that movement down to the most basic fundamental pattern or movement or across the most basic muscle. And then I elevate that and include it back in. So let's take, for instance, they're trying to change directions on a lateral and the frontal plane, like a lateral shuffle. I take the time to actually develop the ankle through inversion, eversion. I'm breaking it down to the most simple form, and then I integrate it back into the biggest portion of that, which is them actually performing a lateral shuffle and changing direction. One, we want to increase the efficiency of the movement, and two, we want to enhance it at its smallest level, right? So that we can increase it, right? So let's say you were working on a race car, right? You can look at it from a global perspective, but if you're going to enhance a race car, you got to go down to the nuts and bolts at a higher quality, the high-end parts of it that make up the bigger whole. Rolls Royce doesn't go cheap on their brakes. And that's what Lamborghini doesn't have cheap suspension. So these are all things and these are all components that we need to elevate, right? That make up the bigger whole. So sometimes we spend on the macro level when sometimes we need to break it down to the micro and then integrate it back into the macro.
Got it. It's funny. I actually read that in football, if a play takes just 1 second at the college level, it will only be a half a second in the NFL. And in baseball, balls that's traveling at 100 miles per hour only takes 400 milliseconds to fly from the pitcher to the hitter. And it takes another 100 milliseconds to swing the bat. So baseball players are left with only 100 milliseconds to make a swing or no swing reaction. So what that tells me is that building that reaction time is a very key component for athletes to develop. So what agility drills can athletes do to improve their reaction times?
Yeah, great question. Mostly deal with professional athletes in their off season right now. So it rotates. My year rotates. So I'm in off-season baseball right now. And so our professional guys are in. And then after that, football trickles in. And then after that, it's basketball. And then I get a couple month break and then we start all over again. So I say that because I have about 3 to 4 months, depending on the sport, for me to be able to develop them. So let's say on a base level, I have 3 months to be able to develop an athlete. Usually it's typically a little bit more, but I use that as a simple round number. So usually what I like to do now, while I'm elevating all these other modalities, their power, their strength, their linear speed. When it comes to agility specifically, I first focus on elevating their ability to change direction on a basic level. Think of that I just mentioned, right? Really isolate down the most micro movements, elevate those movements to then integrate them back. Then what I want to do is I do basically more sport specific change of direction, but it's still predetermined. They're going to be drills essentially that they're going to face in their particular sport. Okay. And then finally, what I like to do is I like to add a reactionary component to those drills. And that's what we refer to as true agility. Right. And I got this straight from my professor in college at the University of Miami, Brian Biagioli. And nobody was really talking about it, but I read his quote in his book, and it's something he said to us in class that I just thought was so profound. And it's true agility is change of direction work with a reactionary component, meaning an athlete needs to process an external stimulus, right? Whether that be auditory, meaning I say go, and then they make the cut or make the start or accelerate, right? Or they do it, process it visually, which we do a lot of that with, which is the athlete being able to essentially, if I point here and they have to change direction and cut on a dime, and now their body's not in the proper position. So they need to put themselves to set up in the proper position, right? So all those mechanics, all that force management we discussed earlier comes into play, because if they might not be in the best foot position or in the best angle to be able to tackle the running back, right? But their body, they need to put themselves in that best position based off of that, based off the reaction. So we just try to basically follow that small little linear progression when it comes to agility training. And then obviously the last part of that, again, is just getting as specific as we possibly can. So true agility comes from us adding those reactionary components to our change of direction work.
All right, Chris, there's the horn, and that means it's halftime. So how you doing? You doing all right? You feeling good?
Yes, sir. Life is good. I'm enjoying this.
Good stuff. So I got a lot of follow-up questions I want to get to. So we're going to take a very quick break, and we'll be back with more of you dropping them dimes on them. So stick around. More with Chris Bernard after this.
LMH Strategies is a leadership, management, and human systems consulting company that specializes in business transformation, program management, and supplier diversity. The professional team at LMH Strategies brings a diverse range of national and global experiences in various industries to help your organization achieve its objectives and deliver measurable solutions. The LMH Strategies impact results in improved workforces, better businesses, and a brighter world. Commercial, government, and higher education markets trust LMH Strategies as their business partner. And the team at LMH Strategies welcomes the opportunity to earn your trust too. For more information, go to lmhstrategies.com.
Chris, I don't know if you heard this before, but I just feel like you're the Tony Horton of athletic training, but just to the nth degree. I actually started incorporating those P90X exercises into my workouts about 10 years ago, and it took my strength and agility to a whole new level. And I still do those P90X series today, but just different versions of it. And the one thing I can appreciate the most was the core training. And it's killer, but it really does help in all other areas of strength and conditioning. And as a young athlete, I never focused on the core area, and I lacked stability in my midsection. And I see that you stress to your athletes that this can be just so detrimental to their performance on and off the field. So if you're looking to build body stability and balance, they got to incorporate core stability exercises in their training. So go into some detail about that and what those workouts should look like to build the core.
Yeah, absolutely. Great question. So we follow a linear progression, just like we do with agility, just because I believe that everything needs to be, again, segmented down, elevated, and then basically figure out how we're going to transfer this over to them as an athlete in sport. So if I were to follow that same example like we did with agility, phase one is usually anti-movement, right? Anti-rotation, anti-flexion, anti-extension, and anti-lateral flexion. These are the basic movements of the trunk, right? Through the spine. And what we want to do is we want to enhance the strength of all those intrinsic muscles in the spine, but also the bigger ones, right? And so what we want to do is we want to make sure they're extremely stable. So that's why we perform anti-movements first, right? So we basically generate that stability, build the foundation of the house. Then what we do in the next phase is we perform the most basic movements that the trunk performs, which is flexion, extension, rotation, right? And lateral flexion. So we're going to perform those movements with some resistance and enhance those. And then finally, we want to integrate those back into movement. So one of the number one things that the trunk does in play or in sport is it transfers energy through the upper and lower halves. Okay. So let's say, for instance, you have a baseball athlete swinging a bat, right? They generate force from the ground through the foot into the hip and then through the trunk, right? To basically create a good amount of energy to be able to come out and striking the ball with the bat, right? So that's an entire movement through a kinematic sequence that ultimately basically results in the trunk turning into a whip. So we need to integrate that into movement that they're going to perform on the field or on the court so that they get the most of it to basically, again, be as efficient as they possibly can, transfer energy efficiently, and just overall be a better athlete. That is your power center, right? We harp on it a lot. We focus on it every training session, and we usually balance it out between those four different movements one day a week, and we usually do it at the end of the training session. And we follow that linear progression to elevate an athlete to transfer over to season.
There's a quote that said in a lot of locker rooms, and I'm sure you've heard it before, and it's, you can't make the club if you're always in the tub. So what type of agility corrective exercises can athletes do to prevent or to reduce injuries from occurring?
Great question. And this is loaded. So I'll say first and foremost, it's extremely important to understand and get familiar with your imbalances on an individual basis, right? So you need to understand based off of your position, who you are as an athlete, and basically what's going on in your world, right? Do you sit 6 hours a day? Are you a student, right? So are your hip flexors tight and you have to go play catcher and then you're in a squatted position? So it's a matter of understanding on an individual basis your imbalances. And when you can identify your imbalances, you can see if any of those are going to compromise you. When a compromise basically lead to injury. So you want to perform corrective exercises that are going to essentially bring the body back to symmetry and balance it out. So first and foremost, we want to be able to do that. Then what we need to identify is look at the sport from a global perspective, right? For instance, suppose a very pattern overload sport, a right-handed hitter, right-handed pitcher or thrower is going to have a lot of the same common imbalances. So we need to attack as and bring symmetry back just based off of the sport. And then finally, we just, again, going back to the actual strength programming is just taking a balanced approach to your actual performance. Some things not always necessarily translate directly over to the sport, but they more or less balance out the body. So it is a multifaceted approach to being able to restore the body to symmetry and balance it out. But the biggest thing I could say is you should be performing correctives, mobility drills, things like that, that are on an individualized basis so that you can make sure that you avoid injuries down line when you start performing higher velocity, more dynamic moves.
Mm-hmm. So if an athlete does experience an injury, what type of agility exercises can they do to restore balance and make a healthy comeback on the field or court?
So usually there's a typical rehab protocol that I follow, and usually that's of my scope. So I usually refer that back out to a PT or somebody in my network that worked with these athletes. But at this point, depending on what the injury is and the severity of it, we want to make sure that we can and almost have that same baton like I was talking about with the actual coaches. So one of the big things that we want to make sure is that the athlete has the ability to produce force and not re-injure them and they're ready. And then once they are, then there's usually a typical protocol. Say, for instance, with an ACL, for instance, this is a severe injury. So I want to make sure that they're cleared from the PT to then come to us. And then usually there's a certain level of that we do, whether it be like anti-gravity or running in a water and being able to perform those, to then increasing that to handle more of their own body weight, and then increasing that to perform low level plyometrics. And then from there, we're able to do higher level, more advanced, more aggressive plyometrics. And then really there's that kind of path when it comes to return to play. So there's not necessarily a specific one, but we do want to make sure that they feel comfortable and confident in their ability to face the movements that they're going to face on the field and that they're not second guessing it. Because one of the biggest things that an athlete after a severe injury is more of the mental side of things, yeah. Right? Like the cut. And so what happens is they actually prefer the other leg, which leads to injury.
Mm-hmm.
So we just want to make sure that the athlete is extremely confident in that. And we've restored balance so that we don't have another occurrence. Mm.
So look, I know you get this 1,000 times from athletes and they say things to you like, I want to get stronger. I want to build more power. I want to bench press 300 plus pounds and squat 500 pounds. So talk about the difference between relative strength and absolute strength and why athletes just get so caught up in wanting to be big, brawny, and bulky, but they just lack in overall athleticism.
Yeah, great question. To break it down on the definition, absolute strength is the total amount of resistance that you can overcome, right? This is 500 pounds versus 300 pounds. The athlete is pushing 500, they have better absolute strength. However, relative is relative to one's body weight, right? So what's more impressive? 150-pound athlete pushing 400 pounds or a 300-pound lineman pushing 500 pounds? Obviously, the smaller one that's more relative to their body weight, it's divided by their actual body weight. That's how you determine the relative. So I actually think that most athletes, which translates over to them being able to be more explosive because they're in their own body, right? They can manage their own body weight, which you're utilizing on the field or court to be typically more effective. Now, if this is a contact athlete, like a lineman, sometimes it's just more or less overall what they can basically overcome as far as resistance. But more so than not, it's their ability to be able to manage their own force within their body weight. So if they have a great deal of relative strength, they're usually the more explosive athlete. And that's really where we want to get that athlete to be in that optimal range to be able to express that. Because at the end of the day, we get so caught up in the strength and conditioning and these terms and all that, but I'm not trying to make you a better squatter. I'm trying to make you a better ball player. What I try to remind the guys that come here. So if they're a highly skilled athlete and they just lack in the weight room, I'm going to focus on the weight room. But if they're a weight room warrior and they can push all kinds of weight, but they lack the skill, I'm going to be honest with them and I'm going to try to push them to obviously focus more on the skill side.
I used to see cats that could bench 300-400 pounds, man, but couldn't even do a pull-up. Crazy as that sounds.
Yeah, 100%. And there's a time and place for that, depending on the actual sport and position. But for the most part, you want to have that balance of relative strength. And that actually carries over tremendously when it comes to the lower body, right? That's your ability to, like, if you actually start to look and break it down, that's your ability to jump. Mm-hmm. That's your explosiveness, right? So if you can't manage that body weight and have that good, sufficient relative strength, you're not really able to utilize that on the field and be more dynamic.
Mm-hmm. So talk about complex training and the role that plyometrics plays to improve power and explosiveness, because I see that's something that you incorporate in your trainings a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Complex training is something that we utilize during our peak phase. Essentially what the basis is, we're trying to perform a heavy compound movement to really heighten the nervous system and then translate that over to a similar movement. So if you were to take like a heavy back squat and then go perform like a big vertical jump or a big box jump, we're basically trying to get the body to perform, or essentially it's going to have an acute response to that heightened nervous system, right? And not to go too deep on the physiological level, but you get potentiation, and then you take that and you transfer that over to a bigger jump. And if we're able to do that, the goal is for us to get a chronic or a long-term adaptation for the athlete to be jumping, right? So if they're jumping normally at, let's say, a 38, and we perform some complex training and get them to perform a 40-inch vertical, right? And we're able to do that multiple times. So the goal is for us to get that adaptation long term. So I like it. It's one of those tools in the toolbox as far as training goes. One of the biggest things that I always want to see with an athlete at the end of any kind of training cycle or phase is that we got that true adaptation. And I'm not just testing them out for a big number through complex means. They're able to turn that on and hit a 40-inch vertical on Tuesday and on Saturday, and not just because they squatted a heavy weight before that. So that's one of the important things that I want to see, because that's what tells me we got true results with that athlete that they can apply on the field.
Personal question for you. I actually heard that you have a 44-inch vertical jump. Is that true?
Not anymore. No, sir. That is,
but you did at one time. Okay.
When I can tell what my playing is. So we were talking earlier before we got on this about the regional combine. So I went to the NFL regional combine. And when I really started testing for that, I was always pretty explosive. But at that time, I never really, I guess you could say, really tested out my vertical. I jumped to 39 and a half at 38. Wow. So that was like one of the biggest ones. And I was an H-back fullback. And I was the biggest jump even amongst all the running backs at the time that were there. Mm-hmm. And so I knew I had pretty decent vertical jump. So once I got done with my playing days and I was a coach, I was like, man, and it still goes back to the same stuff I'm talking about today, where it's like vertical force. It's like, that's like the one metric that I try to, that's my holy grail to this whole thing, right? That's like my secret. If I get an athlete vertical jump up, they're usually across the board, all the everything else elevates. Let me just make this one point. So if I would have just focused on an athlete's vertical jump, everything else will elevate. Their broad jump's going to elevate. Their ability to cut is going to elevate. Their linear speed's going to elevate. Usually some elements of their strength, but their game's going to elevate. But I can't say that for any of these other modalities. If I just focus on athlete's broad jump, not all those things are going to elevate. If I just focus on athlete's linear speed, those other things aren't going to elevate. If I focus on the athlete's lateral explosiveness, those other things won't elevate. But if I focus on vertical, everything else will elevate. And that's why I said that it's become that holy grail. But yeah, after my playing days when I was coaching, I really was like, okay, I became a good athlete because I was so explosive. So I just started diving in and exploring all these methods. Everything I learned from college, from all the internet, everything. And then I just hit the books hard and I just wanted to determine, like, how do you actually do this vertical jump and what better way to do it, but really test it on myself. I never hit a 40 and I was like, I want to shoot for a 42. So I documented it on my YouTube and you can go watch some of those videos. And then at the end of it, I went to go peek out, right? And that day I was able to get on film a 44 inch vertical on the Vertec, and it was history from there. And so then I started working with a lot of people, a lot of basketball athletes wanting to dunk. And
yeah.
But from there, I really applied those same means to a lot of the athletes that I work with.
So was that from doing a lot of plyometrics, a lot of squatting, or what?
All the above.
Okay.
And that's what really formed the system, right? So I really focused on, so I came across Cal Dietz method, the triphasic training. That's a whole nother thing to get into, which could be a whole podcast. Then evolved that into what I call the triphasic, where I just modified some of the phases. But yes, it's a matter of developing a sufficient amount of absolute strength and then transferring that over to a good deal of building up the elastic strength, which is your ability to absorb and produce force, which is true plyometrics, right? And being able to isolate each one of those modalities, elevate them, and then build up an athlete from the ground up into building a bigger jump, if you will.
Wow, incredible. With all this focus on proper training to improve overall athleticism, we got to talk about and address and focus on the importance of recovery and regeneration. So there are multiple ways that an athlete can recover, but talk about the importance of like proper nutrition and supplementation and flexibility and proper rest.
Yeah, absolutely. This is another great question. My stance, to be honest with you, because it goes back to just doing the basics right. I get so many athletes who ask me about, what do I think about cryo and dry needling and all these different recovery methods. And I'm not against any of them. I think that there's a time and place for all of them. However, don't come to me and ask me about those if you're dehydrated, if you haven't drank enough water today, right? If you come into a training session, you're dehydrated, that is far higher up on the priority list than you doing some cold tub regeneration, right? So dehydration, having a proper fuel nutrition, did you eat the right amount of calories? Did you eat the right ratio of macronutrients? These are all basic things that an athlete needs to do before they then start addressing the finer points. We're so quick to get that shiny object and say, oh, this is what LeBron's doing and he spends X amount on his recovery and gets sports massages. Yeah, bro, I got you. But at the same time, you drink like you've had 8 ounces of water. It's 3 o'clock in the afternoon and you're about to come in my gym and sweat your ass off like that. It's just one of those things that I think they need to get the priorities in line. And then you can start to add those other things that are going to support an athlete's ability to recover. And so that's why I say there's a time and place, because even at the professional level, I've noticed that these athletes aren't properly hydrated or nourished to be able to withstand that type of training on a consistent basis. So one of the first things that we do is they work with our director of nutrition and they do a 2 week or 1 week protocol where they write down everything they eat and drink for a day. And they do this for a week. And we're able to, every single talking point at that point is they need to drink more water and they're not eating enough, or they're eating some kind of imbalanced macronutrient ratio. And some of them don't even know they're doing it, right? And a lot of them sometimes like to under or over report. And so we just try to regulate that, get that in check. We can improve that. And then next thing you know, we start to do some of the other things, some of the other methods that are out there, and try to tell the athlete. Some of the other things that I try to do, to be honest with you, is more basic, right? So I try to tell an athlete, let's get your sleep in check, right? Let's have low stimulation. So let's shut the phone off and the TV off and the computer off by about 8 o'clock. every single night. And these are things that I might just start off with on a deload week where we're really recovering the body, repairing the muscle tissue, resting the nervous system, things of that nature, where I want low stimulation. I want the athlete to be able to get enough hours of sleep, hydrate, right? Eat properly. Now that we have these things in check, now you can start going and paying a practitioner to go do these other things on top of it. But don't put the icing on the cake before you bake it. We've gotten into a society where we're so quick to do that on every level, whether it be the fancy drills or the fancy recovery techniques or things like that. Just get the basics right on a consistent basis. Mm-hmm. Do it whether you feel like it or not. That's grit. That's you able to endure this, whether even if you're failing at it over and over again. And the athlete who builds that type of foundation is the one who really elevates himself and surpasses the ones who once a week is able to go get a crazy training session in with flashy drills and good recovery. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's chop wood, carry water every single day.
I'm laughing because I had another guest, Jessica Kern Huff, who actually used that same metaphor. All right, Chris, we about to wrap up. And for everyone that's listening, they're not going to be able to get down to St. Petersburg, Florida to train with you and your staff. So why don't you let our listeners know how they can gain access to you, your videos, your platforms, your trainings, or even if they can get to you in Florida, what is it that they have to do?
Yeah, so Overtime Athletes, whatever platform you prefer, Facebook, Instagram, YouTube, TikTok now. We're on TikTok.
Nice. Yeah.
That's the newest one. So whatever platform. I don't have a podcast. I plan to start one here pretty soon. But
it'll work.
So it's one of the platform you prefer. You can just look up Overtime Athletes. And yeah, we should have some content on there. You can see me, my ugly mug on there talking about something with sports performance and just trying to help pay forward and help athletes out.
For sure. All right, Chris, before I get you up out of here, I have a series of fun questions to ask you. So there's a game I like to play with all of our guests who come on the field called the All Out Blitz. And it's a simple game where I'll ask you a series of questions and you give me the first thing that comes to your mind and your answers will determine if you win or lose. So you can explain your answer if you need to, but here's the catch. We typically have a 3-minute running clock before the final buzzer sounds, but since we're heading into the holiday season, of the season of Thanksgiving, I'm going to extend the time to 4 minutes, but I'm also going to ask you a few more questions that I usually don't. So I need you to mentally focus and get hype like you're about to train LeBron James, all right?
Oh, man. Let me see what I can do.
All right, here we go. All right, question number one. What does a focus-driven athlete mean to you?
Focus and intent with every repetition that they have on a consistent basis.
Right.
Oh, I'm sorry. One word.
No, it's okay. You can explain it. It's all good. Question number two. Who do you think is the most competitive? A high school athlete trying to play in college. B, a college athlete who's hungry to get to the next level. Or C, an already established professional athlete.
B.
I agree. Why do you think that?
Outside of experience, I believe that at that level, that's the level right before you become a professional.
Yep.
So you could taste it, right? A high school athlete getting to a collegiate level, there's a reason why those numbers reduce. And what I've noticed is a lot of professional athletes, a lot of that can come from their genetic disposition. So a lot of those college athletes seem to be hungry because they don't have that check. They're looking to make their life completely different.
No doubt.
Right?
For sure. I agree. All right, we're going to go into the Thanksgiving season, so I got to ask you this. Best Thanksgiving dish, macaroni with cheese or collard greens?
Ooh. I'm going to go with mac and cheese. Got to be baked. But I'm a huge fan of greens, mustard, collard, turnip, having dogs in there. And we were just talking about it. We're hosting 40 at my house this year. We will have a big pot of greens and a couple sheets of mac and cheese on the table.
I hear you. All right. Which leads me to my next question, number four. First thing you do after eating Thanksgiving dinner, watch TV or go to sleep?
Watch TV. Get slumber. Watch the ball 100%.
then go to sleep and get sleep.
And then go to sleep.
Got it. All right, question number five. If you could train any athlete from any sport, from any era, who would it be?
Wow. One. Bo Jackson.
Wow. Good answer. Curious to know about that one.
I would just love to be in the presence of watching the greatest athlete before being injured. When you talk about from a physical side of things, just absolutely the most well-rounded. You could throw Dion, you could throw these other guys up there, but you can't really, the amount of speed, yeah, the amount of power and the amount of strength that guy possessed is just through the charts. Mm-hmm. And what's crazy is it wasn't like he was one of those guys that like grinded like crazy in the weight room. So for me, man, like how amazing would that be able to see, run him through a workout and just be like amazed by, like probably put five plates on the bar, just bench pressing like a toothpick and just
go for it.
I've been benching or have him jump and test out his vertical. And I bet you it was like a 40 something at 240. Like he was just, wow. If you can.
I got you. Go. We got this running clock, Chris.
Oh, go ahead. Go.
Go ahead. All right. Question number six. This is going to be a good one. Because, man, every time I look at your videos, boy, you guys got some serious bangers going on in the background. Best song in your playlist to get you hyped before the start of a game or a workout?
Whoa, okay. For me, it's going to be Boosie, Set It Off, or some kind of Pastor Troy.
Oh, God.
That's what we played in my era.
Yeah. You dating yourself on that one with some Pastor Troy.
In Little League, we were walking out to like Pastor Troy, and I remember the parents being like, what the heck
is this?
Elementary or middle school. That's what we played.
All right. Final question.
Yes, sir.
What topic would you like to see us discuss on Field Goals for the Focus Driven Athlete? And who would you recommend for us to interview that can speak to that topic? But before you answer, your job is to help bring this person on to.
Okay. One of the guys that I have a lot of respect for in my industry is a good friend of mine, Phil DeRue. Phil trains a lot of high level fighters. He's in the MMA space. He has worked and he's a strength and conditioning coach and he's worked with a lot of fighters. And I love chopping it up with him and just bouncing ideas because it's very different than football, basketball, baseball, and your team sports. The mentality, the drive, it's just a completely different game. The fight game is just so different. It's one that I'm fascinated in. And I'm a fan. I'm a big fan of boxing, but he works with all fighters. And he has got he's very like-minded. And I just love hearing him and what he's got going on. Mm-hmm. Let me add one more to that.
Okay.
And I was one of the dogs. And I mentioned him earlier. It's one of my boys, Tuck Taylor. This is a guy who I looked up to growing up. He's an amazing trainer. And then he got into the cognitive space. What he's doing with athletes right now is absolutely amazing. And he's just one that I feel would be able to pay it forward to a lot of athletes. And I think he's not trendy, he's trending, because I think that this, what he's doing is trending up. And I think it's going to be the next biggest thing in sports performance.
Nice, man. Definitely need that. All right, Chris, there's the final buzzer. How you think you did?
Decent. I forgot we were on the clock for a little bit. Could have brushed it up. I could have reduced the amount of words that I spoke in each answer. But overall, I give myself about a C+, B-.
All right, fair enough. Hey, man, that hot seat is the truth, man. A lot of fun, though. So, yes. Chris, man, look, I can't thank you enough for taking my call, answering my emails, coming on the show with us. And I am dead serious when I say this. I had a few other trainers from some solid D1 programs that wanted to get on to talk about the same topic, but I was like, hell no. Okay, I was not about to let anyone do this episode unless you just flat out told me no. So, dude, I appreciate you coming on.
Anytime. Like I said, I appreciate the opportunity. I'm honored to be able to be on here and just grateful that you asked me, man. I appreciate you.
Yep. So, look, I know you have a busy schedule and I know you're about to get even busier as the college football season starts wrapping up. So, thank you. Thank you. Thank you, man. All right. So, I just need you to do us one more final favor. We're always looking to pick up new listeners, so help us get your circle to listen to your episode and subscribe to our podcast. So one last question I ask everyone before I get them up out of here, and that is, do you feel like you left it all on the field with us today?
Yes, sir.
All right. That's what's up. All right, peeps, we got a new episode coming in 2 weeks, and you already know we got another great guest lined up for you. So make sure you hit that subscribe button so you can get an alert when that new show drops. And please leave us a review. And most importantly, don't forget to share this with your friends. Also, follow our Twitter handle at MyFieldGoals and connect with us on all of our social media platforms. All right, you know what's up. Chris is getting up out of here, and so am I. We'll see you in 2. That's a wrap. You've been listening to Field Goals for the Focus-Driven Athlete. Stay connected with us by liking our Facebook page, Field Goals. You can also join the discussion on our Facebook group page, Field Goals for the Focused Driven Athlete. Also follow us on Instagram at MyFieldGoals. And be sure to head over to our website at www.myfieldgoals.com to subscribe, rate, and leave a review of our show. You can find us on Spotify, iHeartRadio, and all other podcast hosting platforms. Thank you for listening, and we look forward to having you join us again soon on The Field.